And welcome back to Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I am here with
May
and Tatiana.
And as always, you can reach us with your feedback and comments on Twitter at DC TV Gumption. You can send us an email, ladieswgumption@gmail.com. You can now hit us up on Tumblr, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. If you want to send us your ask on Tumblr, if you don't want to go to our individuals, which if you still do, Patsy's is Valerie M. Perez, May's is her own hero writer, and mine is Falling in Love in a Flash. But if you want to catch all of us in one go, ladieswgumption.tumblr.com. We have been taking some of our emails because we feel bad that we can't like read the email in its entirety on the podcast. So we take a little bit of bits and pieces from the emails and discuss them on the podcast and then put the rest of it on our Tumblr so everybody can see it and kind of go back and forth and open up more of a discussion. So your feedback will be discussed in its entirety somewhere, either on the podcast or on our Tumblr. You can also listen to us on Podomatic, iTunes, and Google Play. We've got a bit of news in our roundup this week. The Doom Patrol will be getting its own live-action series over at the DC Universe. So we know that...
Crazy.
On the Titans show that they just wrapped shooting about a week or two ago, one of the episodes is called The Doom Patrol, and now it looks like that might be a backdoor pilot into its own series. So what do you think about that?
It's interesting that DC Universe is going to have its own universe.
basically.
I feel like they're obviously optimistic about how things will go for their streaming service if they're already planning spinoffs.
I'm just a little bit salty because Metropolis got pushed back. And Doom Patrol is getting, you know, they got a logo and they're already getting the go-ahead for the live action. So it's cool, but I also want to see Lois Lane on my screen. So
definitely. I'm guessing you're going to mention the other one. It's not for the same. It's not the same, but still, I'm like, how are you doing that and not Metropolis?
Right?
Yeah, it's kind of, I feel like partly they want to, like, get as much as possible to make their streaming service worth it for people to buy and like, watch all these shows. But, I mean, I don't know what they're doing with Metropolis. It's weird. But
getting rid of Lex and making it the Lois Diaries, hopefully.
Yeah. Gotham has been renewed for a fifth and, I believe, final season.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's some trouble in the waters for a lot of DC TV and a lot of TV programming in general this week. Lucifer has, unfortunately, it's still canceled, but Tom Ellis and company are meeting with different networks about finding a new home. So what do you think about the chances of Lucifer getting picked up somewhere else?
Very slim at this point.
Yeah, if it hasn't happened yet, I feel like it's kind of hard. But if Fox or whatever is willing to give up the rights, I feel like Tom Ellis will have more luck in England. You know? Someone British pick it up for him.
That the CW president, at least, I know you're going to mention this, but he did say that they're not going to bring Lucifer to the CW because a lot of people are like, well, CW has a lot of Warner Brothers properties, but he's like, nah, pass.
Uh-oh.
Wow.
Pass.
And they brought Constantine happily, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's on show. They just brought Constantine.
Right.
Yeah. That's but they could bring Lucifer. Yeah. But I guess he probably wants his whole cast to be picked up somewhere, not just him.
That would be kind of, like, selfish if he only wanted himself.
I've been saying this. I mean, it's very, like, it's rude, but, like, I'm sorry. I love Tom Welling, but his character definitely killed Lucifer.
Oh.
That's what happened. His character was the Ralph of Lucifer.
Damn.
But he was there all season, and he got engaged to the female lead. So,
what?
Like when you really fuck in, just like,
oh shit,
yeah.
that's the activating series or season finale that the show is like, I'm sorry.
No, actually, they did resolve that storyline, thank God. But and in fact, honestly, like the thing that was aggravating, like I get why it would be, but for me, it was more like a relief. Like I was like, oh, this is a great place to end it on. So I feel like it ended in a good place, at least for Lucifer and Chloe. For everyone else,
not so much.
Yeah, you kind of want some more. But,
well, in other new show news that's kind of, huh, FX has ordered a new series show called Pennyworth, based on the famous Alfred Pennyworth, who is Batman's butler, and it's coming from the Gotham creators, but I think it was confirmed that it's not the same Gotham universe. So his name's escaping me, but the actor that plays Alfred on Gotham is not connected to this new show.
Well, this show, I think, it's going to take place in England in the 70s, so, like, before he became the Wayne Butler, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Which still makes no sense to me. I will never understand Alfred's backstory. Like, how
wasn't he, like, a spy, like, or he military worked for, like, grade. MI6?
Yeah, exactly. MI6 type guy. He
went undercover and just stayed there. Also, we had some Upfront news this week. The CW Upfronts. The CW president, Mark Pedowitz, confirmed that there are no plans to bring Lewis for the CW, which you said. There's a bit of a scheduling shakeup. Arrow is moving from Thursday nights at 9 to Monday nights at 9. So it's going to be following Legends of Tomorrow. And then Supergirl is going to move into the new Sunday lineup at 8 p.m. to lead that spot. And they're going to be the lead-in for the new series Charmed. While Flash and Black Lightning stay where they are on Tuesday nights, because they got it like that.
Where they belong.
Yes. So what do we think about this move, Supergirl to Sunday and Arrow to Monday after Legends of Tomorrow?
I'm happy that Arrow is no longer on Thursdays. It's just personally.
Oh, thank God, me.
It was just, it started to get really painful, and I know Justin obviously thinks it was painful. but I honestly, I don't mind the move for Supergirl to Sundays. I think it might be good for it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, leading in being before Charmed. So it's a very, like, female-centered night. And I think Arrow might... I don't know if Arrow will benefit coming after Legends, though. Because Legends isn't necessarily a great lead in. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Legends is doing better than Arrow. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to put Legends first. But... at this point, like, I feel like putting DC TV shows together is a good idea, right? Because people that watch one are probably going to watch the other, so it makes it more likely they'll just sit there and stay. So that's good for Monday and Tuesday. And I think putting Supergirl on Sunday shows they have faith in Supergirl. I know a lot of people, some people were concerned about, like, Sundays. Like, I don't know why, Sunday Night Football, whatever, like, prime. But I don't think it's really a bad thing because, first off, CW audiences are really small, but they are loyal. And secondly, like, people that are watching your CW shows are probably not the people who are watching Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football, you know? So.
I agree. And for Legends, at least there's, you know, at least a couple of Arrow characters that started on Arrow. So, like, Sarah and Ray, that would probably... maybe Arrow audiences do watch Legends and will stick around for Arrow, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I do think Supergirl will be fine. I don't think it'll drop any more than it has, at least not in a massive way.
Yeah, I think Supergirl will be fine on Sunday. I think they have a strong enough base that will carry them over. Legends will be interesting because I think, like, part of Legends, it has gotten a lot better. Like, I think it had one of the stronger seasons across the four shows. Mm-hmm. But it also, I think, benefited from the boost off the show before it. Mm-hmm. So, like, having that lead-in. So this will be, like, the first time that it is the lead-in. So we'll see how strong their base stays. So that'll be good. Yeah, that'll be interesting for Monday nights to see how it does. And then how do you guys think it'll affect the crossover? Because this year, because there's that gap between all the other shows and Arrow, they switched it up so that it was... Supergirl and Arrow on Monday, and then Flash and Legends on Tuesday. So, but this time we have Supergirl on Sunday, Legends and Arrow on Monday, and Flash on Tuesday. So it's like boom, boom, boom. Do you think it'll stay in that format? Do you think they'll try to have Black Lightning take a week off so they can do two and two again?
That's what I was just thinking. I was like, they might have Black Lightning take a week off. Or switch Black Lightning and Supergirl that week.
Mm-hmm.
Black Lightning on Sunday and Supergirl on Tuesday.
I thought that's confusing, though, if they switched.
Yeah, it'd probably be more confusing than...
Yeah, I think taking a break makes more sense. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have, like, the two-night crossover and get it all over with within 4 hours.
Right. I think that was really successful this year, so they should do it again.
Agreed.
So, So, one last thing, and a big thing that we found out at the CW Upfronts, is that this year's crossover is going to feature Batwoman. Kate Kane will be coming to the CW Arrowverse next season. She will be from Gotham City, and she'll be formally introduced, I'm guessing, through Arrow, since Steven is the one that announced it and said that Arrow would be key to bringing her in. So what do we think about Kate Kane coming to the CW next year?
I'm cautiously excited. I do love Kate Kane. I do love the Bat family. And I think that if it starts off as strong as Supergirl, then it's going to have, it'll have a loyal fan base behind it for when it, you know, weakens. as they all do. But, well, that's just assuming it's going to become a show. And I'm just naturally assuming it'll become a show.
Yeah.
But for the crossover itself, I don't know. I think it'll be fun. I just hope that everyone's going to get their due, you know?
Yes.
That it won't just be Arrow leading the show and Supergirl and Flash and Legends in the background. And, of course, I want Flash's 100th episode to be about Flash. So that's all. Yeah.
I mean,
I was going to say, everyone using this as a Bring Maggie Sawyer back campaign needs to relax. Yeah. Renee Montoya exists. We don't need Maggie Sawyer, who is not even Latina again.
Yeah.
So, that's
this
all.
Is not a campaign to get your fake ass with these fakes.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I agree. I think I'm worried about the Flash not having its own little 100th episode special, because 100th episode is a big deal. And as the number one show on the network, I think it deserves that respect. And I think that if they can do that, then it'll be fine. I don't trust them to do it. But in regards to Arrow being key, as long as he's not the key to the whole crossover, it's fine. I think him being the key to getting Batwoman makes sense, because Gotham and Batman have only been mentioned on Arrow. So it makes sense that he has that connection, because Bloodhaven was mentioned in like season 2. So that makes sense. But I don't need him to be the center of the crossover. Like, if they're going to head in the DCTV version of Justice League, Barry back in season 1 was like, wasn't he going to be one of the founders of the Justice League? So I need him to be a big part of the crossover.
Same. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll get more of information on that coming closer to SDCC so we can figure out what to expect. And then finally, this is a long intro, but finally, I wanted to get this in. So, you know, like recently there's been a lot of, the haters are starting to get really bold in Candace's mentions, and we've seen her have to like clap back a couple different times, and it's just like annoying and frustrating, and it weighs down on you that, you know, all these people just keep coming for her. And I know that June is her birthday month, and so I wanted to do something that was kind of like positivity for her and the fandom, and I was thinking of calling it hashtag June is for Candace. And so the concept is that June is her birthday month, and her birth month should be like a happy month, so let's aim to spring positivity in her tag by using hashtag June is for Candace. I didn't really have like a lot of strict rules going in, just mainly like positive tweets so that she likes being on her social media. For some of you that like some structure or need like a jumping off point, I came up with like 4 themes. There's 4 weeks in June, so theme for each week, and then a special theme of the day for her actual birthday on June 24th. I'm going to force Tatiana to help me make a poster, so I'll put this on my poster. But if you want the details of what I'm kind of thinking of, like week 1, which is June the 1st through the 9th, affirmations are for Candace. So like, you know, she likes those tiny Buddha quotes and positive life quotes and things like that. So tweeting her, like a quote of the day, things that inspired you that you think would inspire her, like book recommendations, anything positive, affirmations, tag her, tag June is for Candace. Week 2, June the 10th through the 16th, would be like pets are for Candace. So we know, you know, how much she loves Zoe, and when people send her dogs, she's like, if people sent me just more dog pictures, then maybe I'd be on Twitter more. So let's do, you know, pets, your dogs, your cats, your birds, your neighbors' birds, dogs, cats,
parrots.
We know that Zoe's, poor little Zoe's having a surgery on her knee, I think this weekend. So if you have, like, Zoe cards, or if you just went out of pets, you can still send the affirmations, because it'll be, like, a building thing. So you don't have to stop sending something that you're that you like or have a lot of ideas for just because it's a different week. Week three would be June the 17th through the 23rd. Art is for Candace. So all of you very creative people with your fan art, music videos, edits, poster art. You might have like food if you want to make Candace like a birthday drink for her birthday and like art recipes.
Food is art.
Yes, food is art. So anything, poetry, be as creative as you want with it. And then on her actual birthday, June 24th, would be I Am for Candace. So basically yourself and wishing your happy birthday and things like that. And then the last week of June, June the 25th or the 30th, would be Appreciation is for Candace, which would be just, you know, telling her how much you appreciate her, what she's done for Iris West, her friendships, authority, anything like that. So basically, like, the month would just be like a whole long tag, like nothing in the tag, but just positivity for her on Twitter, on Instagram, wherever you think that she will go, let's send a lot of positivity there. So again, I will put all of this on my Tumblr soon, but I just wanted to bring this up so you can think about things. But finally, getting into the meat of the episode, the format is going to be Supergirl and Krypton on side A, Flash and Arrow on side B. We'll talk about our likes and dislikes, season predictions, and crown a lady with gumption of the week. First up, our host is Tatiana this week, and she's doing Supergirl and Krypton God Complex / No Mercy. Tatiana, take it away.
I am doing that. And here we go. Shelter from the Storm opens with Lena and James seeking shelter in each other's arms at her penthouse suite, only to be rudely interrupted by Rain in her ragey search for Ruby. James tries to make Guardian useful once more, but it is Lena's kryptonite version of Mace that saves her from Rain's wrath. News of Rain's attack also interrupts the Legion of Superheroes during their farewell tour, which includes Brainy gifting future Dirt to Win, who he now deems a 1.42 level intellect, instead of just a first level intellect, as well as Mon-El and Kara sharing a bittersweet goodbye. After Kara and John get the deets from Lena, they head to Patricia's home to warn her that Rain is coming. Sam's mom wants to make up for all those years of judgment and abandonment, so she decides she will hop out to surprise her daughter and get herself killed in the process. But at least she says she's sorry before she goes. Supergirl's failure to stop Rain worries Brainiac, and he now knows about it from his spot on the time ship because he bugged Wynn's dirt. What kind of friendship is this? Even though Mon-El tries his best to act like going back to the future is what he wants, Emra releases him from his duty so he can go help Kara and eventually go back to his wife with open arms. How convenient. Over in the land of happier couples, James convinces Lena to come clean with Supergirl about the kryptonite so they can stop Rain together. Kara is super grumpy when she finds out because she's the only person who has ever had to accept the existence of something that could kill her painfully for the sake of the greater good. But nevertheless, the two women agree to work together for Sam and Ruby's sakes. There's also another tragic Miran throughline as he's too busy reliving past memories and people to learn what a mocha is. But with the help of Kara's gentle words and John's white Martian costume, he does suggest using an enemy's code of ethics against them as a method of protection. Thanks, Martian Dad Hunter. Meanwhile, Alex pays the invisible Lex Luthor mansion a visit so she can lie to Ruby some more. She tries to woo the young girl away from her unlocked cell phone with promises of snacks, games, and movies, but Ruby would really just rather call her mom. Unfortunately, calling her mom alerts Rain to Ruby's location, so she comes after the girl with a vengeance. And she reaches her easily thanks to Lex's useless state-of-the-art security system that doesn't protect from Kryptonians. So now, Kara and Mon-El storm Lex's place to stop Rain and double-team her with a clever move. Kara points out that Rain can't kill Ruby because she's an innocent, and a world killer is only supposed to purify worlds of sin, which means they should probably use a different title. And Mon-El shoots her with kryptonite while she's pondering that conundrum. Go team! Now that the threat is neutralized in Lena's lab, Supergirl apologizes and proclaims her renewed trust in Lena. Miran finally learns what a mocha is and then probably forgets it minutes later. Alex promises to stop lying to Ruby, and Lena tells Kara that Supergirl is a fugly skank and James doesn't like her either. And that's what you missed on Supergirl. So, ladies, please share what you liked about this episode.
Well, first of all, your voice is very soothing. Okay.
She should narrate books.
Thank you.
I like like that James and Lena had like a morning after scene. I thought it was super soft. It was interesting to learn that all this time that Lena had been living in the penthouse of some kind of fancy hotel because she didn't want to commit to living in the city in case the city hated her. And I feel like this is kind of meta for their relationship in a way. I'm just going to stand 1 foot outside the door just in case this is out. I'm not too attached. So I thought that was interesting. And it's kind of, you know, Lena's personality and her characterization has been pretty consistent, and that kind of, like, she's really afraid of, like, rejection. So I thought that was a nice through line. Mm-hmm. I like that she and James seem to be in this new, like, official honeymoon phase of their relationship, and that Lena trusted James's advice to come clean Supergirl. I also liked her clapbacks to Kara about her god complex and why no one in the world is allowed to have kryptonite because it could kill her, but 1,000 things kill regular people and they're still allowed to exist. And I thought it was a good comeback that, and Lena had a lot of strong arguments that Kara just had, like, really weak answers for. Mm-hmm. You can't just be like, you know, no, because I said so, you know, it didn't really make any sense. So I was team Lena on that one. Every time, like, Kara blows up on Lena as Supergirl, she tries to end the episode with, like, an olive branch, but Lena is definitely, like, a fool me once type of girl. And what I really liked about the elevator conversation was Kara not being able to have Lena's friendship as Kara while also fighting with her as Supergirl. So it's kind of like, you know, like, in season one of The Flash, when Iris got mad at The Flash, but then Barry was still there, like, and they were, like, friends. Or she was mad at Barry, but she was still friends with The Flash. But on Supergirl, it's like Kara's denied both ways. So I thought that was good for Lena because it's fair. Lena's not unintentionally, she like unintentionally took back her ownership of their friendship in a sense because she's saying no to both of them, which I thought was good and something, it's like a balance kind of thing. Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, Kara.
Right.
Brainy continues to be like my favorite person. And I really like how they, like, his romance with Wynn and his 1.42 level intellect. I thought it was just really funny that Brainy thought Future Dirt was an appropriate gift, first of all. And then, like, why did they have Future Dirt on the ship anyway? Like,
I was wondering that, too. I was like, did he go back and get it?
No, I feel like he brought, like, present dirt. And
maybe it's, like, a custom in the future. We don't know.
Seeing as how he was bugging the dirt anyway, I feel like... Green just went outside and, like, got some regular dirt and, like, called it Future Dirt.
That's so sad.
And it's kind of funny how, it is kind of arrogant, but, like, he's just, like, you know, he thought that 1.42 level intellect was a good enough compliment, but it was also, like, a backhand compliment because he didn't mean it. I thought Mon-El and Kara got a nice soft goodbye, and if I cared about person that Mon-El used to be, I'd be much more into, like, the angstiness of the situation that it is now with Emra telling him to go back and figure himself out. Because it kind of reminds me of, like, Meredith Grey a little bit, and Grey's Anatomy, like, the choose me, pick me, like, that kind of angst. And that was, like, a triangle, too, with, you know,
a wife.
Yeah, a wife in the middle, a wife. And, well, and technically a mistress, but Kara in the situation, but you know, like I was saying, like, last week, like, I like this caramelness, and if this had been there, or elements of this had been there in the first place, then I would be more on board with the situation, but I just can't get past season two, so
it's still salty caramel.
Yeah, kind of stops.
Did you say it's salted caramel?
Yes, it's salted caramel.
That's a good one. There's like one aspect of this whole situation that I didn't like, but I'm glad that Kara at least seems to be in a healthy and healed place overall. And it, like, I, you know, if I was invested in Caramel, this would be some, like, grade A good angst. And then finally, I think John and Mirren made me, like, really emotional, especially when Mirren, like, discovers how to make mocha and then discovers it again because he forgot. And I like how Kara and James were ultimately able to incorporate him and make him feel useful by asking him how he survived White Martians. And it seems to be kind of a running theme this week, because The Flash also had, like, a similar storyline that I really liked. And this is not really, like, a like, but it's kind of like, oh, that's cute. Like, Ruth is like, I'm 12, I can handle it. Like,
aww.
Jon Snow, how cute that she thought that she knew something, but she knows nothing.
So cute. May, what were your feels?
Disrespect to Jon Snow.
Hey, Jon Snow and Ruby probably know the same amount. It's all right. So what were your smiley face feels, May?
My smiley face feels? Well, I also liked James and Lena. Morning after scene, I think that they have pretty good chemistry, and I thought that him handing her his tie so that she could put it on and him zipping up her dress was super domestic and sweet, and I think it says a lot that Lena is now being so open with James, and that he's probably the steadiest relationship she seems to have had since moving to National City, and I like that they're so trusting with each other now, and like, who knew a little bit of honesty would go a long way to develop a couple, right? And I also agree about Lena taking James's advice and telling Supergirl the truth. I really enjoyed the back and forth between Lena and Supergirl regarding the whole God complex as well, and how Lena could also die from multiple things, but she's not necessarily taking it personally, whereas Supergirl was taking it personally. Yes. And I just think I've always been fascinated by the God complex. Like, it's a fascinating argument to have. In this case, you know, that no one is allowed to have kryptonite just because Supergirl is afraid of it is valid on a personal level, but it makes her very defensive. Whereas on the flip side, you have Lena's like, well, you know, it's not that people can't have it just because you don't personally like it. Like, this is not what's going on here, you know? And if I were Kara personally, I would feel the same way. But Lena held her ground and wanted to work with her for the sake of Sam. So I like that. And I've missed seeing Alex and Ruby scenes, so I'm glad that was back, even though it was not all the cuddly scenes that I wanted. But I think Emma Tremblay did a wonderful job throughout the episode and really sold the fear and shock when she found out that Rain was her mom. And I like that she also called Alex out for lying to her and then asking how she could trust her after she did that. So I think it was a nice parallel to the open honesty between James and Lena versus the dishonesty between Alex and Ruby and then Supergirl and Lena. I love Brainy as well, and he sincerely makes me chuckle, like giving Wynn the dirt as a gift and then convincing him of his intellect. And then, like, he scoffed at the idea that Wynn could be even that smart. It was hilarious. poor Wynn. And I will openly admit that I, too, like the goodbye scene between Carr and Mon-El. I think it felt genuine, and I could really feel the longing from Mon-El in a genuine way, and acceptance on Kara's part for, you know, the relationship, and then how they're still not on the same page romantically, but I like that it seems like Kara's gotten to a true place of making her peace with him after all the conflicting feelings she's had, and that she got to express those feelings about what seeing him again did to her, and I think it was just a good scene. And I love that the Luther Mansion is cloaked by a force field and hidden. I think that's just very Lex of them to do. And I also love the final elevator scene. I think it was just, like, really full of tension, and everything that was being said was, you know, you're like, oh, where is this going? I don't know. And Kara's, like, standing there uncomfortable, and Lena's like, yeah, no, I'm over Supergirl.
And Supergirl and I are done, yeah.
It was like a breakup scene, but not really a breakup scene. And finally, I really did love that Marion got to be a part of the episode, and that Kara and Jean use his experience with the White Martians to figure out how to get to Rain, and that Kara had a chance to use words against Rain instead of violence, which was good because she's been wanting to do that, but also allowing Marion to be helpful while showcasing his deterioration, which is very sad and broke my heart. And I think Carl Lumbly and David Harewood in scenes together has been a highlight that I never knew I needed. But I don't like suffering either, so... Oh, and I thought that the final scene was really well done. Like, the final fight scene was done really well visually, and the fight choreography was really on point.
Yeah, their fights have been getting better and better, I think, in the back half of season three. That's where we're at, season three. All right. I, too, had feels, and they were probably the same as y'all's feels. But regardless, we're getting into them. So, like y'all said, the opening Guardian Corps scene was a really great start to the episode, IMO. I loved the music that was playing. I liked that nice, sensual, getting ready for the day moment. And it was, I think it did a good job of implying their physical intimacy to coincide with their more emotional intimacy, because now they're honest with each other. We get to see them actually being in what looks, you know, like a real relationship. Similarly, I liked him asking Lena to talk to Supergirl, because it showed how much he respected and trusted both women, right? Like, he doesn't actually want to put them against each other, and he wants them to be on the same page. And I liked that she agreed to do it because she respects his opinion so much. There were some things I didn't like about the elevator scene. I think I had, like, less happy feelings about it than you two. But I did like the wall, like, that it puts up a wall between Kara and Lena, and that James is firmly on the Lena side of the wall. And I liked that they managed to make it sort of like a, it's not a love triangle because Carlson is so dead, but it is a kind of triangle in terms of, like, you know, like, who's right, who's wrong, and, like, which relationships are you prioritizing, right? Mm-hmm. And which priorities are you prioritizing? Anyway, words. John and Mirren keep being, like, the emotional center of every episode for me, no matter how big or small the storyline is. And, of course, they're breaking my heart in the best way. I really liked seeing John and Kara work together, you know, because it gave her an opportunity to be the shoulder to lean on for him and to be, you know, someone for him to bounce off of in a way that's usually reserved for Alex recently.
Right.
And I also liked that she brought in Mirren to help them with Rain, because it was really, it's nice when, like, the character's emotional, quote unquote, filler storyline connects with the actual big bad plot. You know, it's always nice to see them play off each other. So it was really great to see how Mirren's memories connected to the climactic battle with Rain. And I liked that it made Mirren feel useful. That was very sweet. And just like Jessica, I caught those flash parallels and I felt those feels. Also, his discovery of Mocha was so cute. And he called it, like, what was it? Coco-fifi?
Coco-fifi.
Yeah, and then it started all, and then the memory starts all over again, right? Because he forgot that he just told John, and I wanted to die. But it's great. It's the good kind of dying. I loved Kara convincing Rain not to kill Ruby because she's innocent. And I like that, like, it's not even like Rain was like, oh yeah, that makes, yeah, okay, great, I'm not going to do it. It's like she had to stop and be like, wait, is that what my code is? Is that how this works? Just long enough for Mon-El to zap her with the kryptonite. So I like that it still feels like a team effort, right? Because, like, it took a lot of people to get to that place, but it was Kara who, in the moment, made it possible. So that's how it should be. Again, IMO. I love Brady upgrading a win to 1.42. even though it was lies, but that was a great little moment. And the embrace turning into a bro hug, like, I could probably make, like, a dissertation on, like, low-key homophobia, but for Wynn's character, that makes sense. So I was like, okay, I accept this. And, yeah, the fact that Brainy bugged the dirt was just so Brainy, because he's doing it for these, you know, lesser beings' own good. So it makes sense. Again. I did like the first farewell, like you guys said, between Kara and Mon-El. I thought it was lovely. It was very big of you both to admit that it was a good scene. And so I will join you. I will join you in being the bigger person. It was one of the few times where I really felt their chemistry shining through. And I think they both work, like, Chris and Melissa work best together in those kind of understated scenes where there's, like, a lot that's not actually being said. I also like the Emra and Kara goodbye. It was kind of like a nice, sensible conversation between two women who aren't friends, but do respect each other. So it was nice. And when Mon-El came back to help them fight, I did not groan. So it was already like a marked improvement over previous Mon-El scenes. Finally, Patricia acknowledging that she was an awful mother, wanting to make up for all the previous choices. It was painful because as soon as she started doing that, I knew she was going to die. But also, I was, like, glad to see a little bit of redemption, even if it felt like, kind of, like, leapfrogged over several stages. Because the last time we saw her, she was a raging asshole. And now she's like, I've thought about it since my last appearance, and I was the worst. But it's still, like, it was nice in this episode. I really liked seeing her both forgive Rain and ask forgiveness from Sam at once. And I also liked this like, through line in the episode of Sam's family versus Rain. And how it connects to her, you know, supposed religion. It's, like, the first time we really see her code in action. Because, like, Patricia can die because she's a sinner. even though she seeks redemption and death. And then Ruby can't die because she's innocent. So that's nice. And then she gets saved because of it. That's all. What did we not like?
Well, okay. So, Lex's mansion is, like, cool and all. Like, you know, invisible mansion, da-da-da-da. But considering who his arch nemesis is, shouldn't his house feel like, kryptonite-proof? Like, kryptonian-proof? Like, it kind of took me out of the scene a little bit. Like, in the middle of, like, rain, like, busting through the house and coming for Ruby and setting up all these booby traps that none of them worked on her. But, like, not only should Ruby be safe because she's in his mansion and his mansion is invisible, she should also be safe because it should also be fucking kryptonian-proof. Like, I'm surprised and a little disappointed in Lex that he didn't put, like, kryptonite in the walls of his house or something like that. Like, it just, you know, all the special effects are cool and they're nice and all, but his main nemesis is Superman, so why don't you, like, have weapons in your house that could defeat Superman? It doesn't make sense.
It's like Smallville when Clark would just, like, walk into Lex's mansion. He'd just be like, how did you get past security? Like, there was no security.
Exactly. You know, what security? Bullets? No. Fire? I don't think so. Unless it's, like, Kryptonian, like, kryptonite-infused fire. Like, none of that shit's gonna work. So it's kind of like, you know, it took me out. Like, once I was like, shouldn't she, like, kryptonite? Where's, no? Okay. I also felt that it was, like, awfully, awfully convenient that Kara's chances increased, like, 88.8% instead of 51%, which, by the way, missed opportunity to make poke fun at themselves and say she had a 53% chance. But anyway, but it's, like, awfully convenient that her chances increased so much just with one Legionnaire staying behind, and how Emmer just had to go back right then because of the whole Titan deal. Leaving Mon-El, and then I guess Brainy had to go back. I forget, but he had to go back with her for some reason. So conveniently, Mon-El is the only one that's the best option to, like, stay behind. Like, wow, that works out.
What a surprise.
Yeah, and I said there was one aspect of this Caramelra triangle that I didn't like, and it's basically that Mon-El's presence and feelings, like, are potentially threatening to derail Kara all over again. She's gone through her grief and her relationship, the grief of her relationship process. She's come out the other side. She's healed. And so I just don't want Mon-El to kind of, like, dump all of his feelings on her when he doesn't even know what he wants. So if he is, like, a changed man that he says he is, and it seems like the writers are writing him that way, I hope his figuring himself out doesn't include burdening Kara with the knowledge that he's still not over her until he's absolutely sure what the fuck he wants. So if staying there is what he wants to do at the end of the day, I hope he doesn't, like, tell her until he knows that. Or if going back is what he wants to do, then I hope he doesn't tell her, get her hopes up, and then decide to go back. Like, I don't want any of that. So let's not do that.
Right.
Alex lying to Ruby about her mom was just stupid. Alex was a bad liar anyway. And when Ruby clearly didn't believe her, she just tried to double down on her lies instead of telling her even, like, a partial truth. Like, we're hiding out from Rain. You know, don't tell her that Rain is her mom, but, like, Rain is coming to get you for some reason, so don't pick up the phone. I know you guys said that some people were blaming Ruby and calling her stupid, but I don't blame Ruby for making a phone call at all that alerted Rain to their whereabouts. I blame Alex for being dumb. Dumb for lying, dumb for leaving her phone on the table, dumb for leaving it unlocked. Like, this is why you can't keep people in the dark for their protection, because when they don't have all the information, they sometimes unintentionally do things that may get them killed. And what happened to Ruby in this episode, like, it was made a whole lot of sense that she would want to call her mom, and not telling her the situation about her mom is what almost got them killed. And if she had known that, then she wouldn't have done it. And then, this isn't, like, a dislike, narratively, it's just, like, an annoyance. Like, Sam and Ruby's double voicemail was just cheesy. I hated it. Like, just, like, they're, like, one of those people.
You reached us at home.
Yeah. I was like, oh, my God.
At least it's not the couple's voicemail. I hate the couple's voicemail even more. When it's two adults, and then you're like, all right, stop.
Yes, I agree. Lying to Ruby was completely stupid. Like, she's young, but she's not dumb, you know? And there's really nothing more annoying in the superhero genre than the idea that lying to someone will protect them and that it's for their own good. And Alex leaving her phone behind just after having gotten off the phone and seeing Ruby standing there asking her questions was stupid. Like, who leaves their phone behind like that, Alex, you know? And I just found, I found it pretty lame that the Legion would just up and leave just because they thought they defeated Pestilence. Why not stay behind to help Supergirl fight Rain? Haven't they fucked up time enough as it is? Like, what does it matter at this point, right? And also, they're all wrong, because Pestilence wasn't fully defeated since Rain absorbed her powers, so it's not like she can't use them. So the Legion's mission wasn't really completed, it just got altered. So it was really stupid that they left when there was obviously still work to be done. And Rain could have still infected people with Pestilence's powers. I also think they just wanted the Legion to be shown leaving so that Imra could give Mon-El the choice to stay or go, and it could be, look like he's choosing Kara. So that was annoying. And this was annoying for the reason Jess pointed out. Supergirl is Supergirl, and just because Mon-El decided to come back, her chances of winning were higher. I don't buy that either. Like, she learned a cape trick. That's it. That's it. Okay. And Mon-El going back, I think, was weird, only because he's banking on the fact that Kara still has feelings for him. So he's not truly convinced of where he stands, really, between Imra and Kara. And I'm not truly convinced Kara is 100% sure she would even want to get back with Mon-El at this point, based on the narrative. So he's going back confident that she will want him back. And I don't know that that's a reason to want to stay in the present time. But, you know, again, like Jess said, if I cared, then I think that this was a sweeping epic thing, but I don't.
Welp.
I know.
I don't know if he's confident, but...
Well, I mean, I guess he's taking a risk on the assumption that she would return his feelings.
Right.
Right, right. Is that all your dislikes,
that
dear?
That is all my dislikes.
All right. Okay. So, my first dislike, quote unquote, off the bat was like that Lena had that like pepper spray kryptonite, and I was like, how much experimenting with kryptonite have you been doing for how long? Like, how are we here? So it was like harder to suspend disbelief for me. And then while I said I liked James asking Lena to talk to Supergirl, I didn't like her first response to it, because he had to convince her to do it. And I was like, if you're experimenting, doing all this with kryptonite, what is it for if it's not to use it against Rain? Like, what are you saving it for? So, yeah, that's all. I was just like, that's weird. And then speaking of reactions, I also didn't like Kara's reaction throughout the whole episode to Lena, because my girls were annoying me today. I usually love them so much. But, like, Kara trying to make it sound like her versus kryptonite is so much more unique than, like, I don't know, the people who have to deal with the existence of nuclear bombs that are aimed at them just for, quote unquote, the greater good, you know? So, like, why aren't you doing something to stop that, Kara? But anyway. Lena telling Kara all about how bitchy Supergirl is crushed my dreams that she's just too polite to say that she knows that Kara is Supergirl. So that was very upsetting. I don't like that. And I also, like, I like that this is putting a wedge between Kara and Lena, but not for the reasons that the narrative wants me to like it. You know, like, that's my problem with it. I wish that it had been done at a time when Kara and Lena actually felt close, so that it would be meaningful to me. Like, right now, Kara hasn't checked on Lena in fucking months, from my perspective. So I'm like, all right, good. Whatever. They don't need to be friends. It was more painful when Lena spilled the beans that James lied to Kara. Because then I'm like, oh shit, what's going to happen to Kara and James? Because they've actually been showing that friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that was a fail on the narrative's part. But maybe they don't want me to care about Supercore. Maybe they want me to care about Carolson. I don't know. Anyway, and while I liked Alex staking her claim, so to speak, when it comes to when it comes to Sam and Ruby, I didn't like her asking to see Ruby in the mansion. Not because, you know, like, I liked it when she asked, but then in retrospect, it was just done so that she could lie to Ruby's face blatantly, and then Ruby could call and get herself almost killed. And I was like, this was dumb. I didn't need these scenes. And so, yes, as just pointed out, I saw people on Twitter calling Ruby stupid for this, but, like, what was she then supposed to do? other than call her mom. Like, no one said, don't call your mom because that will be very bad and I can't tell you why. They literally were just like, don't worry about it. Your mom is fine, but also dying and you can't see her. It's just fine, you know? Yeah. So, whatever. That's not on Ruby. She was just told not to ask questions, and she didn't. She just took action. Uh-huh. Anyway, yeah. Yes. Lex's mansion was kind of unintentionally humorous, because it's like, yes, he has all these contraptions, and since they don't work against Kryptonians, it just makes him look like a crazy paranoid person, right? Like, it's just all this stuff against, I don't know, you know, the normal robbers that are going to get into his invisible mansion and then rob him. Like, it doesn't seem, it's already invisible. You don't really need to do that much more. So it was a little weird, especially because we haven't met him. So, like, I don't know. Right now, I can't imagine a real person being Lex right now. Or even Lex, as he's been drawn, being either Lena's brother or Lena's mother's son. I can't remember her name right now. But yeah, they both feel real. He doesn't feel real. I don't like it. Anyway, Rain killing Patricia while Supergirl could only watch until a split second later when she was at full power again was just giving me very Ralph, very Buff Meta vibes. And that's never good. I don't like that. The only good thing was that they didn't show Kara's horrified face for a prolonged period of time. It just cut to Kara for like a split second. But I still knew that Kara was sitting there and not saving Patricia. So, still not good. Anyway, finally, Mon-El nobly choosing to head to the future, and then Emra practicing if you love something, let it go on him, didn't sit right with me, because I know that the narrative wants to absolve Mon-El of any pain and confusion that he's causing, and instead they should have just not made him be married, and that would make it so much easier. So when she was like, you've behaved honorably, I definitely gagged, because I was like, yes, I get it, Cho, I get it, he's wonderful, I will not be upset with him if he and Kara get together, okay, I understand. So, with that over and done with, what do we predict is going to happen the rest of the season?
Well, I just feel like Lena has to find out that Kara is Supergirl by the end of the season, and I can't wait for the fallout, because I like the fallout a lot better. I'm tired of the buildup and her being in the dark. So, bring on all the Lupe versus El drama in season 4, please and thank you.
Yes!
I agree with this. I have no further predictions.
I too agree with this.
I rest my case, Your Honor.
I'll also say that I think the Coville follower girl is going to contain a secret about splitting Sam and Rain, right? Because
I completely forgot about her.
Yeah, I just felt like we should mention that she exists. She definitely ran away with some book that Coville had, right? So I assume she's gonna maybe like she's like defecting and she's gonna want to help Team Supergirl with Rain, and since there would be no reason to kill the other two world killers so early if Sam was also gonna die, so the season will definitely end with Sam successfully being split from Rain.
Okay.
That's my prediction. All right, it's time for Krypton. Let me find my recap. Hope begins with very little of it, as the disappearance of the Voice of Rao has left Krypton leaderless. People are rioting in the streets, Adam Strange fucked off to who knows where and when knows where, and the Resistance hasn't found the Voice anywhere. Seg is losing, you guessed it, Hope. So Lyda offers some comfort and smooches. But when that's done, Lyda decides to head out on a doomsday-releasing mission with Druzad because of mommy issues or something. Jaina and Seg team up with the Sithanites to move the demon creature first, but in the process, we all find out that Drew is Seg and Lyda's son. Sexy. Too bad the new containment unit is not working out, and while Seg would love to take Doomsday to his grandpappy's hologram, the Sithanites would rather set him free. They're so fickle. So, Seg is losing even more hope until his granddad's hologram reminds him that L literally means hope. This inspires Seg to rally Black Zero while Nyssa rallies the Sagittari, in order to track down Brainiac and stop him from getting the fuel he needs. He gives Nyssa the house El sigil before heading off to war, Barf. And lo and behold, Brainiac immediately makes the soldiers turn on each other and creates a bloodbath that only leaves Seg to be saved by Nyssa. How romantic. Despite Brainiac's head exploding, the real one is still around and he starts regenerating while Seg and Nissa run off. So we still have a Brainiac to deal with, and he thinks Kandor is his. Oh boy. Meanwhile, Jax tortures some information out of Darren Vex before he escapes in a skimmer. But since Jax is somehow controlling him, he just crashes somewhere while she steps into a chamber full of high society Kryptonian clones, which is definitely not weird. Finally, all the Zods are super mad at each other over ideologies and shit. It's super emotional. So, Drew and Jaina decide to honor Duel It Out until Lyta shoots her mother to save her son. Thankfully, Jaina is then rescued by someone who appears remarkably similar to her brother, which only leaves Lyta to learn that Val-El is still alive. Do you think he's hiding out as a hologram of himself in Seg's Fortress of Solitude? And that's what you missed on Krypton. What did we like about this wonderful episode of Krypton?
Well, I did like that we got more Jaina and Lyta themes this episode. Like, I was missing their very complicated relationship, and I'm glad Lyta got to express more about how she felt regarding her mother and how she instilled fear in her from a very young age, and like how we continue to see the effects of how she grew up and how those her actions now reflect, you know, her relationship with her. And it made me sad that Lyta doesn't think she's ever good enough in the eyes of her mother. Likewise, I like that Jaina told her that questioning orders was something she attempted to drive out of her, but that it ended up being her greatest strength. And their moments always make me feel many things, and it's also full of heartbreak. It's like, I love you, and I hate you, and I love you. But it's like full of love at the same time of this all this turmoil. But I like seeing it play out, and I think it's very unlike most mother-daughter relationships in this genre, if we ever get mother-daughter relationships, which usually we don't. So I appreciate that. And I also like the beginning of the episode where Seg and Lyta take comfort in each other, and Seg is unsure, but Lyta is, and it's on full display the ways in which they are different, but also what makes them kind of work. And too bad that's ruined later. But alas. And I also like that they finally revealed who Drew's father was, though, because I didn't like living without that confirmation, even though I felt it was a little bit underwhelming. But I'm glad we learned a bit more about the foundation behind Black Zero, and I really liked seeing Lyta's conflict while Drew and Jaina were fighting, and I loved that Jaina's brother was not forgotten. He lives! He did not die! He made a comeback and saved his sister, and House Zod remains the best part of the show. I'm really sad that Lyta shot her mom, but it makes sense to me because she was now essentially being her mother in that she chose her child over her loyalty to her mother to parallel Jaina choosing her loyalty to Kandor. So I liked all that.
Deep.
Yes, some deep stuff. Zod, the Zod women.
I like that parallel. And if there are more people in the Kryptonian fandom, probably have like a gift into that somewhere. But yeah, that sounds like a parallel, yeah. For me, like, Seg and Lyta having a quiet moment the morning of before everything went to shit was really nice. Part of me feels like they conceived Drew Zod, like, right then. And that's why they get it. Because then it would connect later to the reveal that Drew is their son. Which, like May said, like, I'm glad that was finally confirmed. Because it just feels like one piece in the El-Zod puzzle that finally, you know, makes sense somewhere. So now I've got all this other shit to figure out. But that was confirmed. And I've got this one thing that I know. So that was good. You know, there's another annoying flip side that I kind of hinted at, it'll be mainly my dislikes about this twisted family tree, but, you know, at least that one piece is clear. I really feel for Lyta and Jaina, and I want to, like, at, like, all the complexity of why they love each other so much, but just keep doing things to hurt each other. But it's, like, the complexity of their relationship comes from a really well-developed and explored place from the writer's perspective. So it's, like, it's, like, the good hurt, in my opinion, because it's just really compelling. And then I fully agree with May on, like, the greatest weakness, great strength moment when she did you say that, May? Or did I just make that up?
Well, I said that about
she
how,
said it.
About how Jaina was saying about how that was her, yes, her greatest strength. No, I did say that.
Yeah, that was one of my, that may have been my favorite scene in the episode because, like, you can see Jaina is really starting to blossom a little bit as far as, like, her feelings about her daughter. She's becoming, I think, more emotionally open to her daughter in that sense. Once she, I guess it's because maybe like that decision to save Lyta kind of flipped the switch in her and how she felt about the relationship and maybe what Lyta may have felt all those years ago. So I just thought it was really a nice moment between them and Jaina's perspective. And then her brother is alive, which is great. I mean, technically, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing yet because she did, like, leave him to die all those years ago. And now he's back. And I don't know if he's with, like, the moon people or if he's doing his own thing. But the Zods are the most interesting family dynamic on the show right now. So I say more the merrier.
And Cameron agrees.
Yes. And of previously presumed dead people, it, like, the fact that Drew knows that Val-El is alive makes me wonder if the Val-El that Zod knows is maybe one of the clones that are part of the Varro Protocol. Straying a little bit into prediction territory, but either way, like, Tati's going to get her unkilled Val-El wish after all.
as it should be.
Yeah. And then, finally, although there is much about Nissa and Seg's everything that I did not like, what I did like is the fact that this is the first episode that posited them as, like, a team and paralleled their efforts to convince, like, their separate contacts besides Tari and Black Zero to work together. And it was a failure. It was an abject failure. So, like, you know, if it was Lyta in this situation that talked
to succeeded,
or either Jaina as an extension of Lyta, like, both sides would have been on board and they would have executed the mission much better. But since it was Seg and Nissa, they failed. I mean, Lyta and Jaina were so far removed from the plot for the purpose of a feeling, I feel like.
To make it clear, this is in your like section because you like that they failed.
I like that they failed because I like that they failed because it, like, sets up that, you know, you have everything that they've written for Seg and Lyta so far, and the team-ups that they've had have gone on successfully. But, like, as much as they've tried to push this romance in this episode, if you're going to set up your in-game pairing, and this was the second Nissa episode, so this was, like, if you're shipping them, and this is the turning point, and this is their episode, and then you set them up to fail, that's not really how you would develop your OTP of your show. So, I don't know what the writers plan on doing with that DNA baby, and if Romeo has, like, eaten it or is still alive. But I feel like as much as they tried to push that romance in this episode, for it to fail in this episode is not a sign of, like, the OTP and them having to force Lyta and Seg part in this episode to make Seg and Nissa work. It's just not, you know, it's not a sign of, like, an in-game pairing. So I'm, like, turning the situation into a positive by showing his failure.
I love it.
I approve this message.
Oh my god. Alright, that was actually quite a lot of likes. Wow, you made lemonade out of lemons.
I did.
I am also seriously relieved that Jaina's brother appears to be alive. I really, you know, like, I guess she did leave him out there to die, but I really thought he had died. And I was like, that's so sad. So I'm glad he didn't die. I loved Lyta saying, you're not going to lose me, and that sweet, you know, moment, kiss, sexy times with Seg, even though it was literally so that he could lose her that episode, but it was some nice dramatic irony there. Okay, I accept it. And I'm also glad that Lyta kept asking Drew questions about Doomsday and kept pushing back on what he was saying, even as she was helping on the quest, because it reflected what Jaina said later, which you guys brought up, about how she thought that Lyta asking questions and Lyta pushing back was her weakness, but really it's her strength. Because even in this moment, as she is betraying Seg, quote unquote, she's still thinking of his perspective and trying to weigh which is the better option. And so then she just, you know, she decided that the mission she was on was the better option, but after careful questioning, which I like. Also, I'm relieved that Drew is Seg and Lyta's child. And that he has not ceased to exist yet. So although Jessica just pointed out that they probably made him then, so that's why he doesn't cease to exist. But still, I thought it was a good sign. It's a good sign for the future. And the debate between Lyta and Jaina was really great. I wish they had been able to use their words to eventually work things out and not have to shoot her own mother. But they both did it. Like, both actresses did a great job. And once again, as you both pointed out, it's great to see such a complex mother-daughter relationship in sci-fi, that where we see that Jaina really loves her daughter, but Lyta is still absolutely right that her mother's treatment fucked her up. So, yeah. Meanwhile, I like that they connected Lyta to Val-El still being alive, because hopefully that's a way to put her and Seg back on the same page. If she holds the key to Seg finding his grandfather, that would be super helpful. Finally, I did like the editing of Nyssa and Seg trying to convince the people to help them. I don't like the implications of it, and I don't like that whole plot, but I did like the specific scene where Nyssa's talking to Zedatari, and Seg is talking to Jaxer, and you see it cutting back and forth of, like, oh, Krypton learned transitions. So, that's fine. And then finally, I did think that the fear of each other thing that Brainiac exploited was, like, visually interesting. Like, I was like, oh, this is cool. Even though I don't know how I feel about it on, like, a, like, oh, Brainiac can do that? I didn't know he could do that. So I was like, okay. But yes, those are my likes. What are our dislikes?
I think it's weird that Adam disappeared and there was no mention of him disappearing this episode. Like, why wouldn't you show where he ended up immediately after? It just makes the whole aspect of his disappearance lose momentum and suspense within the plot. Kem went to grieve off screen, and that was strange too, because it just felt like an info dump at the very beginning about his whereabouts. And I think there could have been another episode as a cushion before getting back to the theatrics of the whole plot. Speaking of the plot, I would have liked to see Lyta and Drew have a discussion before she goes off to help him release Doomsday, just so that we can get more information about what was going on in her mind. Although, in a side conversation, Jess explained it nicely, that she's working with Drew to try and prove that she was the mother her mom wasn't to her, so she trusted him based on the fact that he was her son. So, even though I love that explanation, I feel like narratively, there could have been like a couple of sentences to give to let us know. Seg giving a speech to the Sagittari about taking down Brainiac was super comical to me. Here's this guy who's barely had direction for most of the season, doesn't even know the Sagittari like that, and still insists on leading them. And he thought they would take him seriously. Like, no wonder some of them wanted to bail. He went in without a real plan and got them all killed as a result. And it was stupid, and he let his anger at Lyta drive his decisions without fully realizing what he was up against. And that made me mad. And Nyssa saying, "She isn't Lyta, I believe in you," was straight up garbage. Nyssa still feels she wants Seg only for her agenda, and I'm really over her cattiness, because it's like really forced. And Seg now trusts her, fine, but he also failed to mention he now knows he has a child with Lyta to Nyssa, so I hope he does so that she can stop feeling so damn confident. And I also dislike that Seg didn't at least try to talk to Lyta before going off to take down Brainiac. And how the hell did they get to Doomsday so fast? It's like, this is a nitpick, but they got there really fast after discovering that Lyta went with Drew, right? And it was stupid to remove Doomsday, because it just made Seg look dumb. Like, where are they going to keep him now? Are they just going to hang on to him while they figure out what to do? And I also dislike that Dev didn't appear this episode either. He's off to heal, but there were too many people missing, and it just felt off. And Brainiac is stalling at this point. I just wish we'd just get on with the plot.
Yeah. It was kind of like they had like this like stupid excuse, like, oh, we know secret tunnels, and that's how we got here first. It was like, really? She left? And you still be there and move like Doomsday? That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But yeah. For me, like, when a character says, "You're not going to lose me," that's when you know, like, you're going to lose them some kind of way. But second, Lyta's like disagreement over Doomsday and Lyta taking Drew's side, it was just like a weak sauce argument for Seg to get so emo over that he completely loses trust in Lyta and like leans on Nyssa. Like, yes, they agreed not to release Doomsday, but when she asked him if he thought they could defeat Brainiac, Seg wasn't exactly a shining pillar of confidence. He was like, "I don't know, I just don't want to lose anybody." So, like, I feel like she took that and was like, "Well, you know," and she's more of a pragmatic kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
She meets Druzad going out, and he was going with her without her anyway. Like, she chose to make a tough choice in that moment because she loves Seg, not because she doesn't believe in him. so, you know, like, he's having a crisis of conscience, and so she's like, well, this is something that we know is going to work, and we'll just figure it out from there. And I feel like the narrative said as much when she's alone with Drew, and they basically have, like, this conversation where they're like, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And that's basically what she's doing in this moment. Like, she's doing it for the greater good, but not because she doesn't believe in sex. She's doing it for sex. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like that was something that she should have gotten shit on, like, the whole episode. Plus, I'm pretty sure that no one, Jaina, like, her mother and her boyfriend, forgot to tell her that her son is a narcissist and a psychopath planning on betraying his people.
Right.
So, from Maya's perspective, like, it makes perfect sense why she would want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Because, you know, like May mentioned, that we had talked about earlier, like, she doesn't want to be a mother, the same mother to her son as her mother was to her. So she's going to be, like, defensive whether or not he's, like, the devil incarnate or not. And, like, she's not just going to let her mother kill her son just because, quote-unquote, rules. I kind of got, like, a little bit annoyed at Drew also when he was trying to, like, pop off at his mom for saving his life. I'm like, hold up. You know, like, step back. She's trying to save your life. And it's in little moments like those that you can see how extremist that he is. So I guess, like, narratively, it's good because he's got, like, a couple of other little things that he said that are just, like, way far to right on the extremist scale. And I'm sure Lyta sees it too, but the only problem is because of the relationship that she had with Jaina, she'll spend a lot of time trying to fix him before I think that she'll come to the place where she accepts that he doesn't want to be saved, kind of thing. Right. So that's, like, the push and pull for her. And then Nissa and Seg, it was super annoying. I agree with you, May, all of her little comments, like, when Jaina and Seg discovered that Light was going after Doomsday, she's like, you thought I was going to be the one to do something stupid? And I was like, first of all, who the fuck? Like, it's really annoying that it seems like she's trying to insert herself as a new Lyta because she's with Lyta's mom and Lyta's boyfriend, and she's trying to, you know, be on the same level of importance and inserting herself into a dynamic that existed long before her. That was super annoying, and I don't know whether it was, like, Wallace's acting choice or the director's, but it was, you know, again, like, it was super obvious this episode was trying to, like, pair them together, especially in certain scenes, like, when they were talking to the moon people, because I cannot remember what their actual name is.
Sinanites,
whatever. About Doomsday, and Nissa kept invading Seg's personal space, so every time the camera turned to them, it was like, Nissa and Seg, really, like, really close together, so it's like us against the world kind of thing. And it's just, you know, like, this episode really, really tried, you guys, like, they really tried, and they still failed. I hated the fact that Nissa has been up, and off, like, even before in the previous episodes, it's just, like, really annoying that Nissa is just, like, invading the Fortress of Solitude with her presence, and that with the key, because she and her father have been trying to find this place for, like, months or years, I don't know how long, to exploit it, and now she has the key, and I got high key excited for, like, a split second that I thought maybe Nissa would, like, level up, and the twist would be that she was playing Seg all along to get the key to the fortress this whole time, which would make her a better gamer than her father. And it would also make her, like, 1,000 times more interesting to me. But then she, like, saves him with the key at the end instead for, like, true love, quote-unquote, and, like right in front of my salad. It was just, like, so corny. And there's no Dev, and there's no Kim, or hell, even Adam. There's none of those people. So it's just kind of, like, I'm left with Nissa and Seg, and it's just not satisfying at all.
Not the meal you were promised.
No.
All right. Well, first off, I thought it made no sense to start 3 days later after the last episode. Like, I don't like starting in media res and not knowing what the res was. So the whole, like, why are these characters off screen right now bits felt really stilted, and it was, like, hard for me to follow. And I really wish that Krypton would respect that my investment level is so low that I need things shown to me and not just told so that I can try to care. So I didn't like that. Like, I guess I'm just supposed to think that they think Adam Strange died, right? Mm-hmm. But I know he didn't die. So I'm just like, well, when did they fucking find out that he didn't die? Like, this is stupid. They should, and in fact, I forgot for a second. So when Seg was like, Adam died to protect us, I was like, oh shit, Adam died? I missed it. No, he didn't fucking die, Seg. So I really wish they hadn't shown us that stupid final scene with that stupid white woman the last episode, and instead waited until the very end of this episode to show that. So then it would feel like something when Seg said, Adam died. But anyway, I also didn't like you guys already pointed out, like, where the fuck are Kevin and Dev, right? So, like, they just tell us, oh, hey, Dev's off screen because he's healing, and Kem is off screen because he's crying. So, like you pointed out, it's just there so that Nyssa is the only one available to hang out with Seg. That she has to be his most trusted confidant, because all of his trusted confidants are either off screen or holograms.
That's like another, that it's not working. Like, if you have to, like, take out everybody else from the plot, she's his number one, then there's probably a problem with that ship.
She's the number seven.
Exactly. Like, you're number, like, five on my call, right? So anyway, I also felt like I missed that whole part with, like, why Lyta went with Druzad. And without telling Seg. Like, y'all gave some excellent points for why that might have been, but it wasn't actually in the episode. So it's just like, like, I get the mommy issues, and now that you said it, Jessica, I'm like, oh, she's doing it for Seg. But I still feel like Seg, you probably know that Seg would want you to tell him, most likely. So maybe if you had just been like, I'm going to do it, Seg, and then you'd gone, he wouldn't be like, I feel so betrayed. He'd just be like, fine. But anyway. Also, Nyssa's, like, yeah, I didn't like it because it was obviously just an excuse so that Seg would feel comfortable enough to kiss Nyssa back, right? Like, I guess we're broken up now because she left, so I'm going to kiss Nyssa. No. Bye. And Nyssa's jabs at Lyta all episode were so, like, grated on my nerves. I really hate the catty aspect of it. I would be much more open to the story, to, like, it doesn't matter to me whether, you know, Seg ends up with Nyssa or with Lyta if it wasn't set up as a direct competition, you know? If it wasn't set up as Nyssa being like, I'm better than Lyta. So then I'm like, okay, well, you're not. So clearly this is wrong.
Right, like, Dev never does that with Seg, and Seg never really does that with Dev, so I don't understand why they would have that with the women. It's so obnoxious.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's why I'm so much more open to Dev and Lyta and versus Seg and Lyta, because it's not a competition. It's two very different dynamics.
Right.
That are both interesting. But anyway. I also cannot tell you how little I care about whatever the fuck Daxor is doing with Darren Vex. The worst part of that whole plot line to me, the first bad that we're spending scenes on it, but good because that means some scenes are not spent on the second Nyssa. But anyway, the worst thing was when she said, oh, he's a survivor or whatever, right? Oh, that Darren Vex, always a survivor. And I was like, fuck, he's going to be here as long as Krypton is. So yeah, I really don't want that. Even when his ship crashed, I couldn't even be happy because I was like, his ass isn't dead. He's going to be right back next episode. I'm tired. Anyway, I also felt like he was so empty tying Hope to House L. Like, when it happens on, you know, Superman stories, and you're like, oh, it means Hope. You're like, yes, because Superman is Hope, and that's so cool that he comes from a legacy of Hope, and I bet his family was fucking amazing and whatever, and now you see his family and you're like, nope, no, this is like... They're foreshadowing Superman. That's all
we have the wrong L.
Exactly. We're going to need a different L. So anyway, yeah, if the show had been about Val-El, then sure. Yes, I believe you. Val-El seems fucking awesome. But not Seg. And so yeah, so when Seg is being all sad, like, all I do is, you know, give birth to someone who plants the seed that is... All right, all I do is plant a seed to plant a seed for Superman. That's my entire role. Like, that is correct, Seg. I don't know what else you do. Yeah, I also don't know what the clothes mean to the story. It was weird that that's, like, the cliffhanger for, you know, that part of it is like, oh, there are clones. And I'm like, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything to me right now. So, yeah. Speaking of, what do we predict that it means or that other things mean?
Faye, did you have any?
I don't want to say it because I really dislike my prediction. I don't want to put it out in the universe. Verbally.
It's already been written and filmed, mate.
I know. I don't want this to happen, but I'm really worried that Seg and Lyta will have their stupid child and that he will be Jor-El.
You mean Seg and Nissa?
Yes, Seg and Nissa, sorry. That's what I meant. My headspace isn't there.
Yeah. Well, like, speaking of Love Square drama, like, the only thing, because I know, like, I saw a couple people that are just, like, planning on giving up the show and with this whole episode. The only thing that will save this episode for me, and if they do it, then I know that their Seg and Mighty game is still on track, is if in the finale, Dev, like, magically is better and goes off on Seg for abandoning Lyta, so Seg feels like shit, and then we get, like, a parallelish type scene where Dev is, like, reuniting with Lyta and telling her that he won't leave her because he's not Seg, and they get a real kiss, and then Seg starts to pull away from Nissa again because Lyta was right, and all the people that he had died, and maybe he should have gone with her, and maybe his face should have been stronger, but he's a fuck-up, so now he's sad. Like, if they do that, then it's still, I feel like it's still on track that that's the direction that they want to go. And that's the only way that that Love Square thing will work for me is if Dev comes back and makes it work. Drew Zod being Seg's son, but also Jor-El's friend, like, this is, like, I also have your same worry, May. Because it seems like Drew Zod being best friends with Jor-El means that he was, like, a secret love child, which makes the doomsday scenario of Nissa being Jor-El's mother more likely. And that sucks because, again, writing and how they're doing that does not really seem like something you want to attach to a Superman legacy. But then again, now we have clones. So there's clones of all, like, the other people.
Maybe Kandor all gets destroyed. And then in second season, everyone that's left is just clones of everyone else.
Yeah. So, like, the elves were gilded, so does that mean, like, Seg has a clone? Was he young enough to get
this? Like, I bet he does.
Like, what about Lyta? Were they, like, gilded enough to have clones? So there's now, like, more couple combos to throw into, like, this whole mess. Like, what if Jor-El is clone Seg's baby?
Real Seg? Like, I was literally thinking that as well. I was like, oh, so everyone else is gonna make clones now.
Yeah. So, like, Superman could actually come from a, like, a clone daddy. And then finally, for the, like, the finale, Doomsday is going to break out of his cage, obviously, defeat Brainiac, and then he's the big bad for season two, if there is a season two.
That's true. Those ratings. All right. Do I have any other predictions? I feel like, oh, yeah, my prediction is retroactive. But I feel the only reason Valo is still alive is because they got tired of a hologram as well. And when it was basically a real person. And they realized that they should never have killed him off in the first place. So yes, I can't prove it, but I know it's true. And with that being said, are we ready to nominate a lady with gumption?
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be hard for this one.
Oh, well, I guess for Krypton, I'm going with Lyta.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just because that she made that tough decision to go get Doomsday, even though that wasn't what Seg wanted her to do. The fact that she was doing it for them. The fact that even though she chose her son, she wasn't blindly trusting him. She still had a little bit of her mother in her, and that she was asking all these questions about what do you have planned after this and all that kind of stuff. So she's still, like, she's not blindly following Drew either. And then the fact that she stood up to her mother and stood her ground and actually made the choice to shoot her mother to save her son.
That does take gumption.
That does take a lot of gumption. So, I just kind of feel like she had, even though, like, the narrative was trying to, like, put her down, I still feel like she shone through in that episode.
Rising against the machine.
I agree.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with that one. I think that would be my nomination, because I feel like on the Supergirl side, I might say, I don't know if I'd say Lena or Kara, but I'm not, like, really feeling either one, because I disagree with them a lot, but they both did show gumption in the episode, so.
They did. I mean, for Kara, I would say maybe that specifically in that moment where she did get to use Rain's own moral code or whatever against her. That was really good, and I think that, you know, she finally had a win, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm going to have to go with Lyta.
Yeah.
Does that, well, I guess everyone agrees with that.
Jessica nominated it. Yeah, so I think that.
But like, are we all in agreement?
Yes, unanimous.
Okay.
And with that, we crown Lyta Zod our Lady with Gumption nominee for side A, which is going to be all alone on its own today. So be on the lookout for side B tomorrow. Flash and Arrow, feelings over facts / sacrifice.